tensions remain high in County Clare tonight as protests continue over the accommodation of more than 30 international protection applicants at a hotel in Inch. The Taoiseach says the protesters' action is unnecessary, and the Integration Minister, Roderick O'Gorman, is to meet political representatives in Clare tomorrow as he tries to de-escalate the situation. The blockade in Clare heightens the political temperature around the housing of asylum seekers and refugees, hot on the heels of the attack on a makeshift camp for migrants last Friday in Dublin City. And John Downing, to you first. The government says this issue represents an unprecedented challenge, and as we know, this isn't passing much truck with the opposition. So what happened in the Dáil earlier? What sort of exchanges did we hear?
Well, it's pretty hot and heavy. The government's saying, look, there are limits to everything. We're at the pin of our collar. We'll keep going. We have welcomed 84,000 people. When you take the unprecedented number of Ukrainians into account, there are also problems in very many other parts of the world, bringing unprecedented numbers here too. Heather Humphreys, the Minister for Social Protection, standing in for the first time for the Taoiseach Ar Thánaiste, taking questions, was very strong, saying, look, there will be some hundreds of beds announced later this week, confirming something that the Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman, said on radio early this morning. But we know there are 500 people without emergency accommodation at this point, refugees and asylum seekers. We hear some hundreds. It suggests it will fall short of that number. Meanwhile, there was the incidents, the extraordinarily ugly and violent incidents in Dublin at the weekend, and now this standoff in Clare.
Yeah, and on that, said, John, the incident in Clare, the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar in Iceland this evening, and he's been speaking in the last short while on what's happening there in Clare. No, I mean, John, did you hear me there?
I beg your pardon, yes. I did. Yeah, we're aware of the my colleague Senna Maloney filed for the Irish Independent. We're very aware that Taoiseach is saying, look, there will be no cap on numbers. Get that out of your heads. We're not stopping taking people in. And similarly, Micheál Martin was on TG Cahir on your sister station doing an interview with Gaeilge, and he said, look, we have an international legal obligation. We have a moral obligation. We will keep going. It's very challenging. It's very difficult. He also said something interesting, Micheál Martin. He said he believed there was considerable misinformation, especially on social media. And he again singled out far right elements, and he spoke about them spreading misinformation. This sort of threat with racist overtones, blatant racist overtones, saying that Irish women and children are in danger from male asylum seekers coming in here. So a particularly ugly situation developing, really.
Well, let's go to County Clare now, and a very good night to Fine Gael councillor Mary Howard, the former mayor of the Ennis municipal area. And Mary, you were in Inch at Magana House a short time ago. What's the latest there tonight?
Well, the community there are feeling very, very vulnerable. It's a rural area. Like, there isn't even a local shop. Out where Magana House itself is, it's up a country lane, essentially. It's a one lane. Like, you'd have to pull in to allow a car to pass. There are a number of one-off houses around it. Like, it's a very, very, it's an idyllic area to live, but it's a very isolated area. There's no footpaths out to the main road. There are no facilities. They are feeling very frightened and very vulnerable there tonight and last night.
Frightened over what specifically? These are 34 men who are seeking shelter, coming from very dangerous situations, we're told. So what specifically are the people in Clare frightened of tonight?
Well, one woman said to me, there was a number of women I spoke to tonight, and they were living on their own. And one woman said to me, this really resonated with me. She said, there could be 60 Irishmen inside there tonight, but I still would feel frightened. So it's just, I think it's the amount of men there. What are they going to do? How are they going to occupy themselves? The houses that they're in, I was told that there's no sitting room, that there is no kitchens, that all the furniture has been taken out and there's beds put in because there are three-bedroom houses with 10 to 12 grown men.
What did you say to that woman as a political leader in the area when she raised those concerns?
I had to agree with her. I wouldn't, I wouldn't like that on my doorstep. There isn't even streetlights out in this area. It is really out in the middle of the rural Ireland. There are no shops in the area that to walk about 8 kilometres to get to the nearest shop. There is a church and there is a school. They're over a kilometre apart. It's a townland. There is nothing out there for these people. And it was actually deemed unsuitable last year for Ukrainian families. So it's
the Minister of State for Integration, Joe O'Brien, clarifying earlier that was to do with a fire safety certificate and sewerage issues and not specifically to do with the three holiday homes where the men are staying tonight. But a video posted online by my colleague John Cook, who I'm sure you know, of four asylum seekers leaving the accommodation on foot with their belongings earlier. They said this was due to the protests. This has led to criticism of people in the area online tonight, that particular video. How would you respond on behalf of the locals to that criticism?
I think it's very unfair. I think people need to realise that this is out in the middle of the countryside. Now, apparently, and then again, this is where the communication piece needs to come in. I was told tonight that those men came back, that they were brought back, and that they were all there tonight, that they didn't actually leave and go to Dublin. Then other people said that they had left. So there was confusion about that. The neighbours nearby, some of them are people on their own. And they just feel very, very vulnerable. They were looking to see if there was security there at night time. When I left, there was nobody there, obviously, with the high vis in or around where the three houses are that the men are housed in at the moment.
So as far as you're concerned, the 34 men are all back at the accommodation tonight. There have been conflicting reports as to whether some had left. And how many protesters remain tonight?
There probably was outside the hotel itself, probably about 15 or 20. But these are all people just standing outside their homes because there are houses around it. There's houses either side and opposite. There's one either side and there's one straight across the road. So the residents in those houses were out. There was other people there. And they're steadfast. They're resolute that this is the wrong place for these men and they don't feel safe. They feel incredibly vulnerable and they are not going to give up.
They have floodlights and a fire pit, I'm told, there tonight, do they?
They had, yeah. They were erecting floodlights as I was leaving and they had a fire pit lit up out in front of the hotel.
You've consistently said over the past few minutes that the residents and locals are concerned, but the chief executive of Clare County Council, this is Pat Dowling, he said earlier today that there is no risk or no danger to the local community, and he has seen no evidence of that and wouldn't like it to be promoted that the local community is in danger. So what you're telling us tonight is at odds with the chief executive of the very county council upon which you are serving.
Not at all. I disagree with you. Fear is subjective. A number of years ago, we had 20 asylum seekers come into Ennis from Milltown, and I'm involved with Tidy Towns here, and we got the men on board, and they were amazing workers, and they were the nicest bunch of lads you could ever meet. And I did say that to them. They said, but Mary, you aren't living beside them out the country. And they've got a very valid point. These are the people that we are elected to represent, and if they feel fear and if they feel vulnerable, we have to listen to that. And I hope that they don't. These men could be the nicest men. We saw a number of them walking up and down the road because there's nothing else to do. I don't even think they've got TVs there. And, they were young men in their 20s and 30s that I saw.
Okay. Very briefly, Mary, what happens next? You've been critical of the department. Are you involved in this meeting with Minister O'Gorman tomorrow?
That's not a physical meeting. That's an online meeting, I believe.
Are you attending?
Some of them. I haven't been invited to know. I haven't.
Okay. Councillor Mary Howard in Ennis, Offanagail, thanks very much for joining us tonight at the late debate. Lisa Chambers, Fianna Fáil Senator, what's your reaction to what you heard there and developments in Clare?
Yeah, look, it's a hugely challenging situation on the ground there. And I can see kind of both sides to it. And You know, I think there's, I think the wrong thing to do would be to vilify the local community in this regard. I think they've raised concerns because they weren't consulted in advance. There was no information provided.
Well, there and was we a know public meeting on Friday.
Friday is not that long ago, with respect. I'm not on the ground there. I'm getting the information as we're all getting it tonight. I'm just going to say that this isn't the first time we've had a situation like this arise. And the department did say, and they're trying their best to do this, that they will try and give advanced information to communities to try and not have this situation happen. So, you know, this, I don't think this will be the last time we have a situation like this, being honest about it. It's a hugely challenging situation for the country. We have had an extraordinary amount of people come into our country seeking protection and assistance, more than 84,000 people in the space of 12 months. So we can't underestimate the pressure that's putting on the system and the challenges. And I think that from a government perspective and the minister's perspective, they're doing the best they can to try and find accommodation for people. There will be tensions, and this is one of those situations. But also, we shouldn't blow it out of all proportion. Allow people on the ground, the local reps, the local community and the minister, to get around the table tomorrow, whether it's virtually or in person, whatever way that meeting
is
happening.
Are you confident in your government colleague, Roger O'Gorman, that this will be resolved tomorrow?
I'm not sure it'll be resolved fully tomorrow, but it will go somewhere towards, I think, easing tensions on the ground. And we have to allow them space to do that, as opposed to commenting from the sidelines, from, you know, in the studio here in Dublin or from other parts of the country.
But it is a microcosm of what's happening elsewhere. And you mentioned it has happened before. This seems to be going around in circles, if you will. Ballymun, East Wall, going back to Uachtarnamh a few years
again,
ago.
Let's not,
and yet the same issues are arising. Does that not say something about the handling of this issue?
Well, that's one perspective to take on it. I take a very different view on it. Let's take it in the context of the thousands of people that have come in. The vast majority of situations are positive. There's been no issues like this in most parts of the country. You know, we've brought a lot of people in and accommodated a lot of people. So yes, there have been small instances, and I think that's worth acknowledging. The issue that you spoke about in Dublin, that's a small number of people that perpetrated, in my view, criminal activity. So let's not blow it out of all proportion and tar everybody with the same brush. Overall, in the past 12 months, as a country and as a state, we have done a phenomenal job in welcoming an extraordinary number of people into our country in a really short space of time. And I think the minister should be commended for the work that he has done in doing his best with the government to provide accommodation. That's not without challenges.
Mick Barry, you heard what Lisa Chambers said there, an unprecedented challenge, she says. What's your reaction to what's happening in Clare?
My reaction to what's happening in Clare is that I think the people in the local community who have organised this protest should reconsider, and they should call it off. I listened to the words of the representative that you had on the line. Is it Mary?
Mary Howard, yes.
Yeah, and she said that the job of a public representative is to listen. And I agree with that. But I think the job of a public representative is not merely to listen. I think the job of a public representative is to lead. And I think part of leadership in this situation is to put it out there that the people who are being accommodated there are people who have come from very difficult situations. Many of them may be suffering from trauma tonight. And to have that added to by a tractor blockade outside of your accommodation, and by 15 to 20 people with floodlights and fire pits outside your accommodation, that is not going to help the situation. The local community will have to get on with the new arrivals in their community, and the new arrivals in the community will have to get on with their neighbours.
The
protest
the locals,
will not help.
The locals say that it's unsuitable accommodation, as they're not here to defend themselves. They say it's unsuitable due to its location, due to the facilities that are there. And one man speaking to the council earlier said, we are entitled to our fears. What would you say to that?
It's natural for people to have fears and concerns, but you have to look at a situation in the round. And there is nothing positive going to come from a protest outside the accommodation that these people have been moved into. And, you know, fears can sometimes have a basis and sometimes they do not have a basis. You talk to people who are involved in sexual violence centres, rape crisis centres across the country, and they will explain from their work, detailed research and so on, that nearly 9 out of every 10 incidents of sexual violence are perpetrated by somebody who is known by the person who was attacked. The idea of stranger danger, the idea that people who have brown skin or black skin and who are male are a threat to women or vulnerable people in a community, that is a fear that is not based on experience and rational understanding of a situation.
I'll come to you in a moment, Sean Sherlock. Jennifer Kavanagh, what's your take on what's happening?
Well, people are entitled to have concerns, but expressing concerns with a fire pit and a bale of hay blocking a road is not the way to do it. We are under a legal obligation to take in people who are looking for international protection, but the state shouldn't be putting them in a room where there's, what, 10 to a space where there should only be 3 people.
Correct.
If that was replicated in Dublin and it was a landlord, people would be ringing up, giving out about that person being a slum landlord. That these people have come from very, very serious, very dangerous places, and putting them into those kind of situations. Look, we have a whole history of direct provision not working, saying that we're going to change direct provision, make it fair for the people who are stuck in the system. But are we actually just institutionalising a whole group of people if you're putting them in one room where you don't even have a television?
The people there say they had a lack of consultation. Is that a fair point? It's something that keeps coming up again and again on this issue.
It does keep coming up. And that thing that was mentioned about a fear of these strange people coming, the exact same thing was going on in Germany when you had the whole influx with Angela Merkel of people who were seeking refugee status from Syria and other places that were war-torn in the Middle East. It's replicated time and time again. And yes, people can be concerned, but you have to be constructive about those concerns, because it is so easy for elements of the far right to weaponise that and create even more fear, and you spiral into a very dangerous situation.
It's been fact-checked as well that this idea of people being unvetted is not true at
Correct.
All. Sean Sherlock, if these people were in Mallow tonight, what would you be doing?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned my hometown of Mallow, because we have a long and proud record of sheltering people, giving shelter to people, either through international protection or people from Ukraine, for a long, long time. And we have put in place a network, a system, social supports around people who come to our town, and we have integrated people into our town. My own local one of my local primary schools where I live 5 minutes from has 31 nationalities. So that's a model of how it can work, where you have the wraparound supports supporting people who are vulnerable, who come in. The fear I have on Inch and my Gauna House, I think is how you pronounce it, is, and I'll be accused of dog whistling on this one, but I'm going to say it anyway, is that if you have a situation where people are put into accommodation in a rural setting, and they don't have access to those services, and they have to be bussed in and out to the nearest biggest town, presumably Ennis in this example, you're isolating those people from the possibility of integrating with communities. And that's one fear I have. Having said that, though, we do have, as has been said, an obligation. But there is a failure of government policy, in my view, in not finding suitable accommodation for people, be they from Ukraine or any other
but
part of the
world. Look at the unprecedented numbers coming in.
There are unprecedented numbers, Barry, but there are any number of locations throughout this city, Cork, and right
Lisa
throughout
Chambers,
bigger towns.
A failure in government in finding suitable accommodation.
Suitably
How do you respond to that charge?
And appropriately so, where you could have the wraparound services for them.
Lisa Chambers.
Well, I would agree with the wraparound services. I think, you know, to say that there's been a failing on the part of government or a government policy fails to acknowledge the unprecedented nature of the numbers coming in, the scale of it and the time frame that we're dealing with. And on any given week, the minister is finding that some hotels that are providing accommodation are pulling back on contracts. They're having to move people, find new accommodation. It's extremely challenging, to put it mildly. I think in that context, you know, yes, there's been some teething problems. There has been some...
Problems.
There have been some people that have come into the country that haven't gotten accommodation immediately. But for the most part, the vast majority of people coming here seeking refuge and protection have been accommodated. Is it perfect accommodation in all instances? No, it's
Mick
not.
Mick Barry,
but
you're incredulous there.
Yeah, I think what happened in Sandwich Street at the end of last week doesn't sit well with the idea that Lisa has put forward of a few teething problems. In the reality of the situation is that the government have had a de facto sleep on the street policy for many asylum seekers since the start of the year, where they failed to provide accommodation. And many of those asylum seekers and some refugees have found themselves homeless, sleeping in tents. Now, we saw a situation earlier in the year where we had crowds of people stirred up, encouraged, egged on by the far right outside of refugee accommodation centres. A lot of anger, hatred in those situations. But at least the people in the buildings were protected by bricks and mortar and by walls. The government have left people defenceless and really almost easy targets for what happened at the weekend that the far right stirred up in Pear Street.
Like the idea that in Sandwich Street that people could be attacked, a fire could take place, people were literally burnt out. I mean, it's shocking in this day and age. And what makes it even more shocking is the fact that you have a cabinet minister who is a constituency TD in that area. Who, if I was a cabinet minister in the constituency of Cork East and there were people living in tents, I would be absolutely ashamed of myself, to be quite frank about it. And we're supposed to give these people protection. And I don't believe for a minute that there isn't available to the government buildings that are owned by the state, or at least controlled by the state, that but could not be used
one,
or
one
repurposed.
Solution that has been proposed, Office Lisa Chambers, is modular homes. They've been promised for quite a substantial period of time, 2,000 coming on stream, but the Minister of State, Peter Burke, has said we should only expect 250 next month, perhaps over a year since they were first promised. What's happening there?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that it hasn't moved at the pace that was envisaged and that was needed. And certainly modular bills are going to be the next phase of dealing with this because...
But if this is an emergency, should they not have been here sooner? Well, even with all the red tape and associated issues?
Well, you know, we would have liked it to move quicker, but it hasn't. But it is coming on stream and we are trying to find suitable locations right across the country. And that kind of ties into, I suppose, the ongoing issues now that we're seeing with tourist accommodation. Many of that been taken back in to provide tourist accommodation. We do need alternatives for people to move to and those that are continuing to come in. But I mean, again, to put into context, there's a lot of criticism and that's the easy position to take is to criticise.
But Sean Sherlock's party leader said today in the Dáil that the government has had a year to plan for this. It has initiated no plan.
Sorry, hold on now a second. A plan for this. We have a war in Ukraine. Nobody could have planned for this. We have had 84,000 come in 12 months. The suggestion from the Labour leader that she would have planned for this is just farcical. So like at least acknowledge that the situation is extraordinary. There is no country in Europe dealing with this that hasn't had the problems that we're dealing with in terms of capacity, services, accommodation. We're not unique in that regard. But it is worth it. It's fine to criticise, but at least acknowledge that there's been a lot of good work. Well, and whilst there have been some not accommodated, the vast majority have been accommodated.
To be fair to Ivana Bacic, she has listed two sites within her own constituency which could be used to house people. And I could give you chapter and verse of, you know, centres that could be used that are in the ownership and control of the state that could be used. And you can get those accommodation ready with the right kind of energy. And
there have been reasons given for those two sites for not being used, the one at Bagot Street and the old Jury's Hotel in Balls Bridge, in fairness, Deputy.
Yeah, but at the same time, what we're perceiving is that, for instance, Lisa talks about the modular homes scenario. The process for that was that, as I understand it, local authorities were to earmark sites, then the OPW requisitions a company to come in and, you know, assess the suitability
so
of those
sites.
Not fast
enough for you.
It could be happening faster, but what is the nature, the number of sites that have deemed to be unsuitable? We don't know how many have deemed to be unsuitable, for instance. So what way is that model working?
And when you look at it, that site in Inch was previously deemed unsuitable. And if there's a will, you can get these places that are unsuitable up and running. You don't need to demolish the entire place and rebuild from scratch. But the worst thing of all is, today of all days, we are focusing so much on immigration, people coming here, looking for protection. And today was the very day where there was the silence in the Dáil to remember the victims of Angorta Moor and all those who were exiled about it. You would actually think of any country, and look, there can be valid concerns, but there would be just more empathy looking at people who are fleeing where we would have been in the same position during the famine. It's been so close, you know, from recent history, if you look at it just in generational terms, and there isn't that sense of empathy that is there that, look, 150 years ago, 170 years, we were the ones who were doing this fleeing.
And John Downing, my apologies, engrossed in the four faces looking back at me here in the studio, I'm afraid. But what's your sense of it? You've heard the over and back there between government and opposition. What is your sense of it? In particular, the Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman, we consistently hear that he has too much on his plate. Is that your sense of it?
Well, this is the opposition argument, the united opposition. We heard it from Sinn Féin. We heard it from People Before Profit, Labour, and the Social Democrats, all saying the same thing: lack of planning, lack of cohesion, and Roderick O'Gorman not getting enough support. Really, what's happening here, Barry, is that there will be an intensive, there's an upcoming Dáil debate on this, which is likely to be very contentious. There'll be an attempt to sort of single out Roderick O'Gorman and Joe O'Brien, the two Green senior and junior ministers with responsibility for this. There'll be an attempt to damn them with faint praise and try and split them from the other coalition partners. So there is quite a dynamic happening here. My own view is that Roderick O'Gorman particularly has stood up very well as a new first-time minister in the Dáil, had the kitchen sink thrown at him from on high. And I think he's coping very well. It is a situation where people cannot magic up accommodation. It's very difficult. There are quite deliberate flaws. The modular failure to roll out modular housing any more quickly than is happening is extremely disappointing and doesn't reflect well on the authorities. But I think there are no magic remedies for this.
Some have argued perhaps that the housing minister, Dara O'Brien, should be involved in all this as well. Has that been an argument that you have heard?
Yes, that's a repeated argument. Tonight, it was interesting to hear Micheál Martin on TG Cahir discussing this, saying, look, it is difficult. It's happening in the middle of a housing crisis, which we're also trying to deal with. But there are two separate things happening here. The vast bulk of people, be they from Ukraine or from elsewhere, are in interim accommodation. They are not being housed per se. So it's hard to see whether there is a role for the Minister for Housing. But yes, we have heard that. And yes, we will hear that again.
Sean Sherlock, one of the contributions at the meeting of Clare County Council earlier on was from a local woman. She said, quote, "This might sound like an obsessive fear, but do you think anyone would be comfortable who has a 15 or 16 year old daughter who would choose that road in Clare to train for her team? Now there'll be 69 young lads inside. Let's call a spade and spade in all fairness." And the woman's words were applauded by those present. Does there need to be a focus on greater education here, perhaps greater information sharing about those arriving in order to allay those concerns, often misnomered concerns as well?
You have to bring people with you in any process that you undertake. And I know we use the words, you know, the word consultation.
But what is consultation?
Exactly. Like, does consultation, is that a byword for opposition? Okay. And sometimes, I'm going to say this, that sometimes the trope around, you know, men, and Mick has stated this earlier on, around, you know, large group of men coming to a centre and, you know, the fear of God is spread throughout the community in relation to... I'm very conscious about the wording that I use around...
greater education, but greater information sharing by the department.
There are certain tropes that are used, let's put it that way. But we have to try... The government has to try to bring people with them. If they are not communicating sufficiently the extent of the challenge that is here for us in terms of trying to accommodate so many people, if they're not adequately explaining why we need to do this, what the international situation is, if people in Clare feel like that they're not part of that process, or that they're not bringing the community with them, then you're going to have situations like this where people, you know, express those fears. How do we, and this is the challenge for all of us as public representatives, how do you bring people with you? How do you develop a language around this that is inclusive? And that's a very difficult thing to do at the moment.
Jennifer Kavanagh, we've seen what happened with Sandwood Street as well, and those concerns as relayed in Clare, perhaps in some instances hijacked by certain elements. Does that for you perhaps further the cause for legislation around hate crime?
The first thing is we do actually have legislation on hate crime. What I would be interested to see is how effectively it's being used. Because if you are calling for violence or calling for protests against certain people because of certain characteristics, be their nationality, ethnicity, that is a criminal offence as it stands right now. So what is being proposed is stepping it up more, including LGBT, including, say, Holocaust denial, all that sort of problems that we have that are live issues when people are throwing hate on certain groups of people. But the legislation is only good if it works. You can have all the legislation in the world, but unless it is actually possible for prosecutions to come in and for people to be made accountable for what they're saying, there's no point in having any legislation.
But could it make a difference if it was policed properly, if it was
and
effective?
And that's exactly what it comes down to. The people are actually aware of what is criminalised speech when you are looking for, say, a bonfire of a certain gender or nationality, that sort of thing can be prosecuted. So people feel like they can actually go and report these certain things.
And I've reported on several of these protests myself. Local concerns can often be hijacked. So for you, Mick Barry, would that hate speech legislation, if and when it's completed, would it make a difference?
Hate speech legislation can make a difference. But the key thing that needs to be done here is to address the social issues, the social crisis, and in particular, the housing crisis, which is giving the far right an audience at the moment. The haters are going to hate. The racists are going to be racist. But it's a tiny minority of people within society. It's where they have an audience. And the fact that people feel, and I think with a lot of justification, that the government is doing not nearly enough in terms of the 12,000 people in emergency accommodation, in terms of the 4,000 kids in emergency accommodation, and so on and so forth. And the racists are then able to argue, look, there's a lot of efforts being made in terms of refugee accommodation. There are a lot of efforts being made, I would say not sufficient. And people don't see the same type of efforts being made in relation to the emergency accommodation and the housing crisis that they have all around them in those circumstances.
There's a practical example, if I may, yes, in Fermoy, where recently the far right tried to mobilise, where under international protection people were being housed and given accommodation. The community came out and met fire with fire against the far right, and they were sent packing. And that same community of Fermoy now works very closely with people in that centre and
it is
through
also
that process of
said
integration.
Lisa Chambers, that some parts of the country, and the statistics bear this out, I've looked at it, are shouldering too much of a burden. Perhaps they are seeing a lot of people come into their area when perhaps they don't have the services to match. And other areas, for instance, Dublin CHO6, which has some of the most affluent parts of the country, are not taking in anywhere near as many asylum seekers or refugees. So is the government having a collective approach that every part of the country is taking their fair share here?
Yeah, there's a lot in that. You know, are we saying that it's too much of a burden if you can show that your area has, you know, per head of population seen a larger increase than other areas? People are becoming very familiar with the statistics around this and what parts of the country have taken in more refugees and international protection.
But to get
officers,
that social cohesion that McBarry has spoken about.
You see, people are looking at that and they are kind of starting to question, well, you know, it's putting pressure on local services and why is that neighbouring county not having the same pressure? So that is feeding into the conversation. We're hearing that on the ground. And as well, you know, I'm conscious we've gone from talking about the situation in Clare to talking about far right elements and hate crime legislation. I don't think that should be, they should not be joined together, in my view. I think it would be a bad move for those of us in the bubble of the legal sector or Leinster House to start telling everybody that has concerns in these areas that, oh, they must be infiltrated by far right.
To
point I was making, Jennifer, is that if you put it in the same conversation, people in that area might feel as though we're casting judgment that they've been infiltrated by far right or that it's somehow motivated by hate. I think as well to acknowledge that what we've learned over the past 12 months is that, you know, if that property were filled with 30 women and children, would there be the same opposition? Probably not. Let's be honest about it.
Is that a concern?
But it's just the reality of it. And I know what Mick was saying about there's no evidence to back up.
Is it good enough it's a reality that there are one rule perhaps for those arriving from Ukraine and one rule for those arriving from, as Mick Barry has said, some desperate situations?
Well, I'll deal with that point if I can finish the just what I was saying, and that if we are... I think it would be far better if there was a mix of people coming into different areas as opposed to segregation and, you know, not having that balance. I think that would alleviate some concerns. This I'm saying on the benefit of having had 12 months listening to communities and issues being raised. Separately about the two different systems, yes, there are two different systems. Ukrainian refugees are being treated as EU citizens as per an EU directive that all countries have signed up to. So they're getting social protection payments, a PPS number, a medical card. So it is a completely different system to international protection, and that's very
lots of people are getting in touch with us. Floods of texts coming in here. Patricia Howard, this text from Wexford, saying, I'm in a rural area with no lights, footpaths or public transport. I welcome refugees. Another one here, 1,760 acres of state land are available within 3 kilometres of Dublin city centre, close to all the services and ideal for emergency housing. It's known as the Phoenix Park, says that person. John Downing, you're still with us there. Just in relation to Sandwich Street, the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar in a bit of trouble here. What's his remarks on the Gardaí about this, and what clarification or perhaps sort of clarification has he issued this evening?
Well, it seems to be slowly untangling itself, or is it just tangling into a bigger black knot? The Taoiseach asked if there were enough Gardaí. The Gardaí said, look, we don't have enough resources and we don't have enough manpower to properly deal with this threat of far right and this extremism and this horrific violence. The Taoiseach, when asked about it, said that there weren't enough Gardaí. The Minister for Justice and the leader of the Green Party seemed to demur from that view and said that there were enough Gardaí in reality. So today, it seems the mystery is revealed. The Taoiseach, when saying there weren't enough Gardaí, was really saying, tell you what, we never have enough Gardaí, but we're going to have more and more and more Gardaí. So, that's why I was saying we haven't got enough Gardaí. I mean, really, it's a bit of a tangle, a bit of a mess, hardly linear.
And Garda sources said to be unhappy with Mr. Varadkar's initial commentary. And Sean Sherlock, did the Taoiseach undermine the Gardaí with that initial commentary
Absolutely.
Over the policing of Friday?
Yeah, no question about it. And I think, like, this is typical of Leo, and I've served in the Dáil since 2007. We came in on the same day, and Leo has served in quite a number of government departments, and he's a master at the arts of deflection. And this is deflecting from the real failure here, and that's a failure of government policy. And if you look at Sandwich Street, that is a failure of government policy, no matter what way you cut the mustard on this one. And, you know, to go out and say that it's a matter of policing is really, really, you know, wide of the mark. Could I also say that Roderick O'Gorman, you know, commands the respect of people right across the party.
Yes, we've heard this point, and he needs more help, the opposition.
Varadkar is going to have to take ownership of this issue and not
Lisa
continue
Chambers,
to
Chambers, did
deflect.
The Taoiseach not undermine the Gardaí with his commentary yesterday?
Look, I think he probably may, on reflection, might have said something different, but...
That's a very political answer.
Yeah. So he did undermine the Gardaí.
You know, I can't speak for him, but look, I mean, the Gardaí have been very upfront in saying that they don't feel they're resourced to deal with this type of criminality.
But they had specific operational plans for these types of protests, which they say they've implemented successfully in other parts of the country, in other parts of Dublin before Friday. That was their retort to the Taoiseach's commentary yesterday.
Which is great. And I do think, you know, whilst what happened at Sandwich Street and in around the Pier Street area was appalling, you know, it's not the first time we've had criminal behaviour in the capital city. I think it's been blown out of all proportions.
Very briefly, does
it
not call into Mr. Varadkar's judgment? We see the furore around his partner's social media posts at the British King's coronation. Are there questions around his judgment tonight, given this clarification he has issued?
I'm not sure you could conflate the two matters. Look, I think the other issue, I'm not sure people were that bothered about it, to be quite honest.